Life can be stressful, news is depressing, and much of the time it feels like our goals and desires are just out of reach. In spite of all that, my guest is here today to talk about gratitude. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today I'll talk with James Autry. He's an author, a poet, a consultant, and a former high-powered executive. Before leaving to become a writer in 1991, he was senior vice president of the Meredith Corporation and president of its magazine group. His latest book is Choosing Gratitude, Learning to Love the Life You Have. Today I'll talk with him about his path toward gratitude and the lessons he has learned from others. We also want to hear from you. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're going to talk about gratitude. My guest is James Autry. He's an author, a poet, a consultant, and a former high-powered executive. Before leaving to become a writer in 1991, he was senior vice president of the Meredith Corporation and president of its magazine group. His latest book is called Choosing Gratitude, Learning to Love the Life You Have. And this hour, we also want to hear from you. We want to hear about your experiences with gratitude. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jim, thank you so much for being here today.
It's nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
I want to start with a definition of gratitude. That's really where you begin in the book, by talking about, you know, we are taught to say please and thank you and be polite, but you think that gratitude is something that has to be learned as well. And what do you see gratitude as?
Well, I think gratitude is a way of being, if you'll pardon that expression. It becomes part of who you are, and it's difficult to just say it's a characteristic, but it has something to do with living in appreciation for life and for all the things around you, and even learning to appreciate and be grateful for some of the bad things that happen and what we learn from those and how we respond to those. So I can't give you a quick one-word definition, but the best thing for me to say is it's something you have to cultivate. It has to be a way of being, a way of acting, behaving. And a lot of that has to do with behaving toward others. I think people who are grateful as a way of being are also generous and loving and supportive.
When did you start thinking about gratitude?
Well, I don't know that I consciously started thinking about gratitude, but through a lot of life experiences, including a lot of negative ones, including, you know, death and family, divorce, a child with a disability, what you come to realize is that it can all be bad or it can all be good. It's so much a matter of your attitude and how you approach it and how you embrace life or reject it. I certainly learned a lot about gratitude from the experiences of raising a child with a disability. Our son, Ronald, who's now going to be 29, has autism. And, you know, you start out wanting this child that you have ambition for, the child that you want to be. But what you realize is you have the child who is. And so at some point you stop mourning the child who's never going to be and start celebrating the child who is. And that's a step toward gratitude. And I realize that I learned so much from Ronald in that experience that I am grateful for that, despite the fact he still has his challenges.
You write about what you call now your gratitude walk that you
Yes.
take every day. And this is your morning walk. For
Yes.
exercise.
Yes.
At what point did you start thinking about that as an experience in daily gratitude?
Well, I actually have an essay in the book about that. I walk every morning. I was always sort of health conscious. And after having bypass surgery, I really got health conscious. So, but I would walk every morning and, you know, I'd think about the world, what was going on in Washington, or the wars, or all the problems, and I'd come back home and I'd be agitated. I thought, you know, walking is supposed to be healthy. It's not supposed to be like this. So I tried to figure out ways to make the walk healthier, not just for my body, but for my spirit. And I talked to my wife about it and, you know, thought about prayer. Well, it didn't take very long to run through the list of things and people to pray for. And one morning I walked out. It had been a thunderstorm, and it was very beautiful. The air was sweet, and the birds were singing, and I thought, thank you. I just thought to myself, thank you. And I realized that's it. So I decided to turn it into a gratitude walk, and it's very much like a meditation. If you try to meditate, you know, when your mind wanders or something else, you're supposed to bring it back. So I do that. If I'm walking along and trying to be grateful for this or that and my mind begins to wander, I'll just look at something like the sun hitting the trees and think, thank you. Thank you for that. And be
so it's almost become a mantra.
Yeah, it is exactly, almost like a mantra. It's a meditative discipline. And though I've never been very successful at transcendental meditation, I'm successful at this. This really works for me as a meditative experience. And that's how I came to it.
And why do you think it's important for you to start your day with that experience?
Well, some people I know pray in the morning. Some people meditate. Some people drink a lot of coffee and get agitated. I think it's very important for me, particularly when I was managing a bunch of people and now trying to write and express my ideas and my feelings and my philosophies, to start from a centered place, a calm place. And that's what I want to do. That's the reason I do the gratitude walk. And if I didn't do that, I'd probably do some other meditative thing.
How do you think that framing that time of day in this way, thinking about it as gratitude, and really feeling grateful for all the beauty in the world and all the things that you have, how does that affect the rest of the day?
Well, it just sort of sets the whole theme for the rest of the day. You know, when you walk along and you're feeling grateful for everything from the squirrels playing to the birds diving at my cat and anything, whenever you turn all those experiences and those observations and those senses into an expression of gratitude, then you don't just come back and start being ungrateful. It just carries over so that you carry that attitude of gratitude with you all day long. And, you know, I hit times in the day that are frustrating. And, you know, and certainly things on the news are frustrating. But I just try to take three deep breaths and be grateful for the fact that with all the problems in this world, I don't have any problems. I don't have any complaints. You know, and I can say, well, that's not true. You have to, no, I don't. I just choose not to. And, you know, I know the country has a lot of problems, and I'm involved, and I think about that. But by any rational, objective examination, we are a blessed people. We live in a blessed country and in a blessed part of the world, and we need to be grateful for that. It's not that we need to disengage from our civic activities or from being involved or caring about the values and the policies we believe in, but we need to realize that we should be grateful for the freedom and the opportunity to be that engaged, to be that frustrated about them. Does that make sense?
So it's not that you are not allowing yourself to engage with the things that are frustrating, that give you stress. This is just a place to start from.
Yeah, and also it's a place to return to and to sort of call up in the midst of frustration. You know, I get angry and I get frustrated. You know, this is not an interview with St. James the Perfect here. I have my own difficulties. What I realize is that we should all have strategies for returning to a calmer, better place, a place in which we are trying to be the best person we can be. And this feeling of gratitude allows me, helps me, empowers me to do that.
Is this something that you feel you grew into with age?
Well, with maturity, I'm sort of ducking the parallel between age and maturity.
Sure.
But I think I grew into it with maturity. Yes, indeed. I learned along the way, and I tried to do various meditative disciplines and explore different philosophies, and I tried to actively do that. But I think I grew into it through just a series of integrating experiences into this attitude.
If you look back at 30-year-old Jim, do you think that this is something that had you sat down with someone like yourself and talked about this, do you think that this is something that you would have been able to?
I don't want to look back at 30-year-old Jim. That person is a different person. He may be as assertive in wanting to do well, but he's an entirely different person with a different set of values, basically.
So this is something that you grew into.
Yes, indeed.
I want to talk about your brother, because you write about his last days of life.
Yes.
And really, he wrote about his last days of life.
Yes.
He was a very, very successful journalist. And when he had suffered from cancer, he had recovered from cancer, and then he got the diagnosis that really told him that he did not have very much time left. And he sat down and he started writing in a journal.
Yes.
When you looked into those pages, what did you find?
Well, first, I've sort of lived through it with him, but he didn't show me the journal. He kept the journal to himself and his wife, and I only got the journal much later after his daughter died and gave me that. But when I looked into it, I found a person who had been through so much, who had simply come to peace with it and was grateful for all the people and experiences in his life. In fact, he wrote thank you letters and farewell letters to all these people in his life, and he wrote about writing the letters. And what came through to me is that he was a person of very generous spirit, despite his driven journalistic image, and that he was grateful. He ended his life grateful for the experience, even grateful for the experience of going through the illness. So, and I had already started working on this book when I came across these papers.
And well,
they had to be in the book.
We'll talk more about them in just a moment. My guest is James Autry. His most recent book is Choosing Gratitude, Learning to Love the Life That You Have. And you can join our conversation as well. Our number is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about gratitude. My guest is James Autry. He's an author, a poet, a consultant, and a former executive of Meredith Corporation. His latest book is called Choosing Gratitude, Learning to Love the Life You Have. And Jim, just before the break, we were talking about you getting an opportunity to look into the journal that your brother kept in the final days of his life. And that journal was the parts that you shared. Obviously, there was a great deal more there that you didn't include in the book. But it was just remarkable to see how, although he hadn't given up entirely on beating this cancer, he really, really embraced the love around him and the outpouring from all of his friends. And he wasn't angry, and he didn't write a great deal about his grief, although a little bit about his grief. He really, in a way, made those final days a celebration of the life that he had built.
He did. Could I read the last entry?
I would love that. Thank you.
The last entries in and he was looking at a collection of photographs, and he said, "I wanted to break into a dance of joy. What a wonderful life it has been. What good fortune has touched me and my family at almost every turn, and it's not over yet. Even now I keep receiving letters telling me what a splendid fellow I am. If they keep coming, I soon will be forced to conclude one of two things. Either they are telling the truth or they are convinced I'm a goner. Meantime, I'm assuming nothing and appreciating the hell out of all those golden, gorgeous words. Any final entry? Snow covered everything today, and we had a spectacular display of cardinals, goldfinches, towhees, and other songbirds. It all served as a metaphor, a temporarily bleak outlook, but one with many birds of hope. That was his last entry.
When you read these entries of his and the ones that you didn't include in the book, what was your reaction?
Well, part of my reaction was I wished I had had a chance to spend more time with him during those days. I did go down to Atlanta as often as I could, but I wished that he had talked with me about some of those things, you know. But he was a writer basically, and he wrote them, and I got to read them. But I was grateful to have gotten those, and two, you know, once you get past the sadness, I realize that he set a wonderful example of how to live and how to die.
This book is a collection of your life experiences, and in this case, a life experience of your brother's. But it's not a chronological journey. It's not a list of things that you're grateful for. How did you conceive of this book? What do you want people to?
Well, you know, it started as a couple of essays and a couple of poems, and then I thought, you know, I think I can make a book out of this, and maybe I'd like to. I really feel called to do it, and maybe it would be published, and maybe people would like it. But it's sort of based on what the famous Kansas poet, his name jumped out of my head, said once in an interview, he said, the writer's work is to dig so deep into his own story that he reaches everybody's story. So I just thought if I tell things from my own story, maybe people will relate to that. Maybe they'll find points of gratitude in their own story.
We'd love to hear your story today as well at 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Share your experiences with gratitude. And Amanda's on the line from Central Iowa. Hello, Amanda.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very good. Tell me your story.
Well, actually, this listening to the radio today, it kind of blew me away, the timeliness of this story. I just experienced a wedding September 22nd, and it was the most humbling experience of my life. We didn't have a very big budget, and what happened was my mom's very close friends and her community where she lives got together, and they handmade all of the decorations for my wedding. Every sparkle, every little ribbon, everything was handmade and put together with love, and the women took the week before my wedding off work, came in, and we decorated the hall, and the day of the actual reception, when I looked out and I saw everything, it was honestly the most humbling thing ever, seeing all the faces of the people who have driven so far, seeing all the little knots in the decorations that they had done just for us. It was unbelievable. So in our thank yous, we're opening one gift a day instead of having a big gift opening ceremony or anything. We're opening one gift a day, and we're sitting down and we're really writing thank yous, not just for their participation in our wedding, but for who they've been in our lives. And that's what I'm hearing in this letter was that his brother did just that with the end of his life. He went through and wrote letters to these people, and it's, I can definitely relate to that on a different letter or different level, but yeah, I've felt that gratitude in my life lately, and I'm hoping to carry that through, not just with this experience, but with other experiences in my life, too. So,
oh, Amanda, thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Yeah, what a great story.
Yeah, absolutely, and what a tremendous community. And obviously, I think, and I get this from your book, Jim, when you see the love that people have for you and you really take the time to be grateful, you also see a reflection of what you've given to the world.
Yes, and you feel your love for them as well.
And Amanda obviously has invested her love in a lot of people and seen that come back to her as well. Peter is on the line next from Clear Lake. Hello, Peter.
Hi.
Hi, what would you like to talk about today?
Well, I wanted to ask him, what about all of us, those of us who are already grateful, that who already understand that the sky is a beautiful blue and the grass and the shrubs are a beautiful green, and the squirrels play and all that. What about all of us, though, that have already had these epiphanies and realizations many, many years ago and who continually have to struggle with people who are ungrateful and who don't understand how beautiful the world is, and we have to continue suffering at their hands? That's the part I don't understand. I just don't get it. You hear in the news stories about, you know, little girls gone missing, just terrible things happening, people that are causing real and tangible trouble to basically the innocent, I guess, because once your eyes have been awakened, you are sort of innocent and cleansed, if you will. So how do you deal with that, with the ongoing mayhem and destruction of and persecution of those that already get it?
Well, that's... Don't you hate people who say that's an excellent question? That's an excellent question. And the fact is, you know, there's a lot of bad stuff in the world. And I think that if you try to live in gratitude, it's an interior process. You're doing it for yourself. And what you hope is that by doing it and living in gratitude and expressing what I think people do, the support and the generosity to other people, what you're doing is modeling something that you hope other people will take up and do. But I'm not listen, I'm not a Pollyanna. I know everything in the world is pressing on us, and often the world is too much with us. However, what I believe about this cultivating a sense of gratitude about things is that you are creating in yourself the kind of person you want to be, and you will project that to other people, and perhaps they'll follow suit. But I'm not suggesting you will be converting people from the mean-spiritedness and the anger and the vitriol that they have. That's the world. But you don't have to let the world create your life. You can create your own life, and that's what this is all about.
Well, and earlier I tried to take you back to 30-year-old Jim, and you didn't want to go there. But, you know, we talked about this being a feeling that you had matured into. Is it something that you feel we can all embrace, even if we're at that time of life where we have to strive and we have great ambitions and there are so many things pushing us forward? And in some ways, you harness the stress in your life to accomplish things.
Yes, you do. Well, the same question comes up when people talk about transcendental meditation, which says you want to get rid of the stress. I've heard people say, I need my stress. I need my stress to get me going, to get me producing. And what you come to realize is that all of these are constructs. These are constructs you create for yourself as the environment in which you want to work and how you to live. And you have the choice. I mean, those are things you create. Your stress isn't there because somebody made you stressful. It's there because you became stressful in response or in reaction to something out there. So I'm simply saying that it is healthier for you. It's healthier for everybody you know and come in contact with. Your life touches all kinds of people every day. You can't do anything in which your life, your action doesn't touch someone. You can't put a coin in a Coke machine without your life touching all the people involved in that. And I think it's a realization that because your life touches so many people, then the best thing you can do is be the best person you can be, and not just for yourself, but for all those whose lives you touch. And I think we often get completely abstracted from the people we touch. I think about when you're pulled up to a corner and you got to the corner at the same time the other person got to the corner, when you wave that person ahead of you, it's a little act of courtesy, but it says something. When you try to race them, it says something else. One's about peace, the other's about hostility. And so your life touches other people in jillions of ways, both large and small. And I think developing this sense of gratitude and this way of being creates you as a person more generous and therefore more responsible and more influential in the world.
Well, to go back to what Peter was saying and to link it to some of the things that you were saying earlier, when you found yourself going on those walks and fixating on the things that you felt were wrong with the world, you know, a lot of people dedicate their lives to certain causes, dedicate their careers to certain causes, and whether that's working for the welfare of children or animal welfare, environmental, you know, whatever that cause might be, I've seen people just eaten up in that kind of field because they are faced every day with the ugliness of the world, and they're trying to combat it, but every day they see the worst examples of what they're trying to fight. And in some ways, I think it's easy to think about embracing this idea of gratitude as sort of giving up, focusing on the positive, but that's not what you're saying. You're not saying that, that you shouldn't also fight for what you believe in.
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm not taking a passive, and I personally am not passive. I can be am very passionate about things I believe in and things. I'm chair, co-chair of People for the American Way nationally, and we're very involved in resisting the incursion of religion into politics and vice versa. I'm very passionate about that, about the First Amendment, and have been a very long time. I'm passionate about disability rights. I was president of the Epilepsy Foundation of America, and I've worked, of course, with in the autism area, but all the disability rights areas. And it's just, you know, I'm passionate about that, and I can speak passionately about it, and I can condemn people who would do injustices for those people who are least among us, to quote, and need our help and support. And but I'm not working in social work. I'm not a caseworker, and I very much love and support what they do, but I realize they have a very difficult job, and it's very hard for them to remain grateful. My sense is that they have to be grateful one person at a time because they help a lot of people, and they can just stay focused, as many of them do, on the people they help rather than on the people who are trying to somehow demean or torpedo what they're trying to do.
Well, you have a wonderful example. When you were invited to the White House, when the Act for
Americans with Disabilities Act.
Right, was signed, you talked about the unbelievable joy in the crowd there at the White House. You know, so many people with disabilities who really felt like they were going to be treated as equal people in the United States for the very first time, and just this incredible power of joy. You write about seeing the group of journalists who were sitting there and looking fairly unmoved by what was going on, because this is something that they see every day. So there's an example of not tuning in to the joy and the gratitude in the world around you in that.
And some professions, journalism being one of them, are taught to remain skeptical.
Right.
And that's what the danger for a journalist, and I was a journalist for many years, the danger is that you're skepticism transmogrifies into cynicism, and that's you often hear about the cynical journalists, and they'll say, "Well, I have plenty of reasons to be cynical." Well, I don't think so. You have a lot of reasons to be skeptical, but cynicism is a very debilitating thing for everybody around. I understand that people face these things. And for journalists and other professions, I mean, think about the emergency room physicians who see, treat so many gunshot wounds, so many wounds that are acts of violence, and how they must react, how difficult it must be for them to remain optimistic. So, you know, as I say again, it's an interior process, and if you can get to it inside yourself, then I'm just convinced that you can radiate that to others.
And it may even make it possible for you to continue fighting for what you really care about.
Indeed, good point.
I'm talking with James Autry. He is the author most recently of the book Choosing Gratitude, Learning to Love the Life That You Have. He'll be reading at Prairie Lights Bookstore tonight at 7 o'clock in Iowa City. You can also find out more about his work if you go to our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio. And we want to hear from you this hour, too. We want to hear about your experiences with gratitude and, of course, your questions for Jim as well. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and my guest today is James Autry. His most recent book is Choosing Gratitude, Learning to Love the Life You Have. He is an author, a poet, a consultant, a former executive at Meredith Corporation in Des Moines. And you've been writing poetry for a very long time, Jim.
Since 1975, not counting the poetry, the terrible poetry I wrote in college.
Well, you have to write the terrible poetry to write the wonderful poetry later on, right? But is that similar to, is sitting down to write a poem, is that a similar feeling to what you're talking about when you are feeling grateful, thinking about gratitude?
I'm not sure. I'm always grateful when I've written a poem or when I find the right line. But my poetry writing is largely a process of lines coming to me. I jot them down on little pieces of paper. I come back and try to construct them into a poem, and I work them and rework them. And so it's a combination of art and craft, as every good art is. But I can't be in a place of agitation and write poetry. So I have to be in the same sort of place I seek through gratitude.
Would you read one of your poems for us? You wrote a poem about optimism.
Yes. Yeah, it's in this book called Optimism. My grandmother seemed to live through the Great Depression and World War II with an attitude of expectation. When my ship comes in, she'd say, we'll buy that, whatever it was, then go about her work with a cheerfulness I could never understand. What was the ship she was expecting, and where was it coming from? When I was older, I decided she was just trying to say we didn't have any money. Later, I came to realize that it was her way of saying things will get better. Later still, I understood that it was her way to hold on to the blessing of her eternal optimism. And, I've read that poem. People will tell me, as you did today, it reminds you of your grandfather. People have said to me, my grandmother or my mother used to say, when a ship comes in.
It's a beautiful thing, that unshakable belief that something good is around the corner.
Yes.
In spite of all contrary evidence sometimes.
And that's part of gratitude, too. It's a sense of optimism.
We have a lot of callers on the line who want to share their experiences with gratitude, and you're welcome to join our conversation as well at 866-780-9100. Carol is on the line next from Dubuque. Hi, Carol.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for calling. What do you want to talk about?
I went through a very stressful period of life a number of years ago, and I was really having trouble sleeping, and I was dwelling on all of the consequences of some bad decisions and how helpless I was feeling about them, and it was exhausting. And then I decided to use that old phrase, count your blessings, and I did. And I would lay down and I would start counting all the things I was grateful for from my birth to parents who were really devoted to me and on up, and to the people in my life that have supported me and brought me great joy and fulfillment and my great opportunities I've had that not everybody has. And I was just filled with this sense of I'm not powerless, I am not my circumstance, and I do think things will get better. And I just have to relinquish the fact that I'm not in control. And regardless of what happens, I'm still going to have so much more than so many people have ever had. And it just served me so well to be grateful and to count my blessings. And I kind of pay it forward because I smile a lot and I say thank you a lot, and I try to bring some sense of gratitude to people who do things for me, from the people who take my recycling away to the people who bag my groceries or the people who do work at my home that I physically can't do anymore. And so I think when you appreciate other people, that's a way of kind of paying it forward.
Carol, have you found that you've been able to, once you started doing that, is it something that you continue to do even as life has gotten easier and better?
Yes, exactly. I think that I feel sad for people that are envious, that never have enough, that always feel like others are more blessed than they are. And so then I think of myself, I'm thinking, this is what I have, and it's really important to me. And this is what I can do to make someone else's day better. So, yes, I do continue to kind of look at what my bank is holding, and I can't go someplace where I'm not invited. I can't go to someplace where I have no control.
Well, Carol, thank you so much for sharing that with us today.
Sounds like you embody gratitude, Carol.
Well, thank you, Mr. Audrey. I appreciate that, and I will definitely be getting your book.
Thanks a lot for your call, Carol.
All right. Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye. Next up, we've got Lois on the line in Ames. Hi, Lois.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
What would you like to talk about?
Well, I have a lot of experiences, like every other caller, about utilizing gratitude as a strategy for having a better life. I also have learned tremendous amounts from people with disabilities. You know, I am one of those social change agent kinds of people who actually burned out, got depressed, had a bunch of losses and things like that. And much of what I learned from people with disabilities and that liberation movement and gratitude and being with what is instead of wishing for what's not, it's just been remarkable in my life. But what I wanted to share and encourage everybody around is to learn about your brain. There is a biochemical reason, a human biochemical brain-based reason that gratitude works. And when we express gratitude, when we shift our thinking, as the woman before said, we are empowered. And we change our brain chemistry from that of a depressive, sluggish victim kind of biochemistry into an empowered and more effective biochemistry. So I'm not a scientist. I read a lot about the cutting edge research in the world of our brains. And I just encourage everybody, Google it, learn about it. This is real. This is not just a spiritual abstract precept. This is real. And it's about our humanity and it's about our brains. And we can not only change ourselves, but change our world by changing our brains in this way.
Well, Lois, thank you so much for talking with us today. Jim, do you want to respond to that?
Well, I don't, you know, having been involved with the Epilepsy Foundation and in the mid-70s, I was president of the Institute for the Advancement of Health, which worked to try to legitimize the research into the mind-body connection and the prevention and treatment of disease. So she's talking about the brain chemistry. I don't know much about it other than I do know that positive actions change the brain chemistry and tend to replicate one another.
There's a part of your book where you write about the death of your ex-wife.
Yes.
And how you were almost surprised by the grief that you felt over her loss. And you had very understanding people around you, and your wife of 30 years understood well that you were sad about the loss of this woman that you had divorced so many years before. But it struck me that your changing outlook on life allowed you in a way to celebrate your love for her, even though your marriage had ended so long ago.
Yes, it did. I thought at first my grief about that was related to my sons. It was their mother who died, and then I realized, wait a minute, this woman left college to follow me into the Air Force and lived with me in France while I was flying fighters and people were getting killed. She was in the midst of friends whose husbands had been killed, and it was a very stressful time for her. We went through a lot together, and we had good times. So I thought to myself, why wouldn't I be grieved? Why wouldn't I want to celebrate her life? And I said in the essay I wrote on that, the beautiful thing is my present wife, Sally, suggested and arranged for a planting of a tree on the State House grounds, and we had a little ceremony with my two older sons and Sally. And, I entitled that essay, Does Love Ever Die? And the answer is no.
Mutaz is on the line next from Bettendorf. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
I appreciate the subject. It's a very interesting one. For me, gratitude, it's a lot easier to be grateful when you have positive experience around you. But when you have some negative experience and disasters and calamities, it's a lot harder. For me, the only way I can cope with it is with my belief. And I believe the belief is essential, how you look at life, that help you actually go through the hardship of the days. For me, I believe in a life after and accountability that compensate for a lot of the injustices that I see around me. I wonder what his view in that regard.
Okay,
the effect of the belief in the being grateful.
Thank you so much for your call, Mutaz. So the question is, it's difficult to be grateful when things are going badly around you, when you're surrounded by negative things, and he returns to his core belief, his religious beliefs. And really, you write a great deal about the fact that gratitude is something that has to come from within, not from without.
That's right. And religion is a wonderful basis for gratitude, if indeed you embrace the religion fully. And I think that the idea of whether another life or a better life in this life, whatever it is, I think religion provides a very strong basis for gratitude.
David is on the line next in Iowa City. Hello, David.
Morning. This show has been a real roller coaster ride for me, because when it first opened up, I thought, yeah, I believe in that. And then I thought, yeah, but what about all the bad things? And the thing I've realized as I've listened to the conversations here is that no matter how real one side, whether you're talking about gratitude for good things or fear of bad things, no matter how real one of those things is, it does not diminish the reality of the other. And it really, we can gather strength from our gratitude if you choose to, just for a while every day, focus on what you're grateful for. That gives you power inside, and it kind of cranks you up a little bit and makes you more able to face the negative side of life. And I've just kind of come to that conclusion as I've listened to your show today, and thanks.
Well, thank you. That's summarizes my attitude about it, so thank you.
David, thank you for your call. And Martin is on the line next. Hello, Martin.
Hi. I just wanted to share an experience quickly and then make a comment. Just a little bit less than 6 years ago, I was diagnosed with a malignant melanoma. And it was removed surgically. And after the surgery, I was told that there's a 3.7% chance of living 5 years later. And I made the decision at that time that I was going to be grateful that I was going to be part of the 3.7% of the population that survived this melanoma. And so yesterday I met with my oncologist 5.5 years later, and he said, you know, there's really no reason for you to come back. There is no melanoma in your body. The likelihood of a reoccurrence, he said, is teensy. He said, so there's really no reason for you to come back. I think you're cured. And I guess the comment I would make about that is that I made the choice almost 6 years ago to be grateful that I was going to be part of that survival, 3.7%. And as you work with that, it just becomes a default. It just becomes a default attitude. And it served me very well. So it's almost like a muscle that you can develop over time just by working with gratitude.
Well, that's congratulations,
yes,
Martin.
Congratulations.
That's wonderful. That is wonderful. And, you know, there is a lot of power to positive thinking in dealing with everything in life.
Yes, and a lot of research on that, too. So it's not just intuitive. It can be proved.
So obviously it's not a 100% panacea
no.
to all ailments. But, Martin, I'm so glad that it helped you overcome your cancer. And we have just a minute left. We have an email from Nick in Chicago. And he says, today is my birthday. Happy birthday, Nick. He says, and I'm grateful to be here still kicking. It's a challenge to maintain a positive outlook in a challenging landscape, in my case, Chicago. I'm amazed how environment can chip away at your outlook. But I find optimism and positivity becomes a habit forming. And also contagious. I think growing up in Iowa greatly influenced me in maintaining optimism and gratitude. Does your guest find geography to be a big influence? When someone states their gratitude for my assistance or kind act, I always joke, no worries, I'm from Iowa.
Well, gratitude is the best addiction you can have.
Do you think that, now you didn't grow up in Iowa, but you've spent many, many years here. Do you think that that there is an Iowa outlook that can help us with our gratitude?
Well, there definitely is, but, you know, I don't think it's just Iowa. I think it's most societies that have a strong rural and agrarian base. It seems to be – I don't think you can be a farmer without being grateful. So I think that, indeed, Iowa people are a pretty upbeat lot.
Well, Jim, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Charity.
Thoroughly enjoyed it. James Autry, his latest book is Choosing Gratitude, Learning to Love the Life You Have. And he will be reading tonight at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City at 7 o'clock. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Our production assistant today is Caitlin Fry. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up tomorrow on the show, we'll talk about the Found Footage Festival. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.